This is KGVM Radio, 95.9 on your dial.
I'm Marion.
And I'm Jim. We are your hosts for this weekly program, Meditation to Self-Realization.
Our intention here is to do interviews, guided meditations, and share teachings of Hindu philosophy. We will be discussing how we can reach our greatest potential through self-realization.
This week we want to focus on a theme that will be taken from a book by Prithiji and Krishnaji, The Four Sacred Secrets.
So Jim, before we get started, I'd like to lead us all in a short breath pause.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
To relax and become centered.
All right.
So let's take some slow, deep breaths and be very conscious of your inhale and your chest rising, and an exhale with your chest falling. And take a couple breaths this way. Relax your facial muscles. Relax your shoulders. Be sure your lips are closed as you inhale slowly and exhale slowly. And now, take another inhale, and on your exhale, slowly open your eyes and join us.
That's nice. Thanks, Mary.
You're welcome. So, Jim, I'm going to ask you how you started your journey on seeking towards self-realization.
Well, I think it started way back when I was about 19 or 20. I got out of high school, and for a couple of years I was a junior accountant, and then I went to night school, and I was realizing how sedentary of a life I was, and I was a pretty active guy. And so I took up a yoga class at the Swami Rami Institute in Glenview, Illinois. And back then, it was more like going to a fitness center where I wasn't really paying attention to any lessons or teachings or anything like that. I was just into stretching and breathing and whatever else they were doing. But I did have opportunities in the evening sometimes. Swami Rami would come in and everybody would, I call it a jam session. They'd be chanting and singing mantras, and it was so happy and joyous. And so that was my first attraction.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you're doing yoga and then chanting. Mm-hmm. So what did you notice in your body and in maybe your mental framework?
For my body, I was realizing what parts were stiff or not getting used, because I would get sore on certain postures. I realized I was gaining some weight because it was hard to bend sometimes. I had to throw that in there. But anyway.
And how about
body-wise, the breath, the mental, it was pretty good. I mean, I could see where it calmed me down, you know, calmed me out a little bit, and it just, but that's so long ago. I mean, we're talking, 50 years ago, so I can't really remember all the details, but that was the start. And then later on, and we took a trip to the Baja, and you remember when we stopped off in Oakland for a Mutananda event?
Well, this was many years later then.
Many years later. Yeah.
Because I
about three or four years later, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I started getting into more looking at spiritual practice, and more than anything, the Hindu end of it. And so we picked up the book, the Bhagavad Gita, on that trip. Went down to the Baja. One day we were snorkeling, and I remember that it got chewed up by cows. And I think there were, a couple pages in there that we thought were pretty profound, that those pages got left. And this is going to sound crazy, especially since you can't remember all the details, but my hunch is some of that profoundness was becoming a seeker, you know, taking a path, picking some kind of spiritual path. So,
well, the Bhagavad Gita was very spiritual.
It was, and we were reading it, and then the cow eater, I thought that was pretty profound right there.
There were some actual whole pages that became messages to our souls.
Yeah, really.
To our consciousness.
You know, and cows were sacred for Hindus back then, I guess. They still are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, you know, let's just move the dial forward here. And over the years, that was what really attracted me. You know, I got into the Be Here Now book by Ram Dass. I think we went to DePaul one time and watched one of his lectures, which was more like going to a nightclub act with mantras and chants and jokes and everything else, you know. Singing with the Hare Krishnas, I thought that was pretty cool. I saw them at a rock concert one time, and that really intrigued me. They were in a big tent in the back of it. And this was down in Atlanta. It was like another Woodstock, the second Woodstock. And they were helping people that were ODing or hurt. But there was a lot of chanting, dancing, singing going on, mantras. And that really intrigued me. It was more exciting than, believe it or not, than the whole concert. Every day I would stop by that tent and just see what I might be missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was stuff like that really got me going, and it was always leaning towards the Hindu philosophy.
It's almost as if I'm hearing that you're soul was dancing with the music of the Hare Krishnas, with the Ram Dass music and chanting. And
yeah, that's it. Without even knowing what the heck was being chanted at that time.
Not really bringing any awareness to
it. Right, but it definitely connected with that deep inner soul. So how about you? How did you come upon the oneness movement?
Well, you know, if I really look back, I believe I was seeking from a very early age. And being raised a Catholic, I realized how I fell into communicating with the saints and the angels. And because my dad was an avid gardener, and he talked to his plants and his trees in the garden.
That's what you do.
and so I can say that nature has always spoken to me, or, you know, I had communion with nature. And then Jesus was in the church. For some reason, I latched onto Jesus as my good friend as a child. And that faded some as I grew up and left the church, decided that wasn't working for me. And then the biggest influence, I think, was when I lost my hearing when I was 18. Within 6 months, my hearing was almost nil. And needless to say, I was both terrified, freaked out, and angry. Angry because I didn't understand how this happened and I wasn't getting any help. Going to, you know, get it checked out and no one could give me, I think the doctor that I saw, a throat, nose, ear doctor, told me that I didn't hear because I didn't want to. And in retrospect, I do believe there was some truth to that. I think he was speaking from a place before his time, because I was part of a large family, and I heard a lot of instructions and have-tos and you should, and so I believe that there was some truth to that. In any event, that experience became a monumental crossroad for me, because I was so external in my life before this happened, and all of a sudden I was forced inward. Mm. And that inward journey, once I relaxed and once I felt this calm presence with me, who I right away connected that it was Jesus, because I felt very at home and very comforted. And once that happened, everything started falling into place. I was able to find a specialist, and I was able to have surgery on my ear called stapesectomy, and it was extremely successful. I only had it done in one ear, because if I had it done in two ears, I could have lost my equilibrium at the time. So I had it done, and so my right ear was restored, the hearing, most of it, not all of it, most of it, enough to be functional again. And during that 6 months when I was internal and learned to be okay with it, actually settled into it, was my first introduction to meditation.
Oh, because when I first met you, I don't know if you remember it, we weren't really together yet, but I guess I was pursuing you. And then one night you said, oh, Jesus loves you. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting. You know, I thought you were a Jesus freak, you know. And I was already exploring the Hindu philosophy with the Swami Rami there.
And I believe I still am a Jesus freak or advocate.
That's nice.
And so that was my very first. And from that point, I didn't fall into regular meditation, although I did, I was drawn to books that helped me along the way. The Way of Mastery, which are three books in one, with Yeshua giving some guidance and instruction. And then together we did Kundalini Yoga, and that was another form of going inward. And as far as the oneness...
Yeah, how did that... Because you got into it before I did.
Yeah. So friends and neighbors kept sending me an email about coming on to a call from India. And they had spoken to me about oneness. In fact, they'd been to India a couple times. And I never really could hear exactly what it meant to them. They just kept, showing me pictures, and then they kept sending these emails about checking out these calls, weekly calls. And so Jim and I tried it a couple times, and we'd sit for maybe 10 minutes and look at each other and, can you understand what he's saying? It was a monk. His name was Kumarji. And he would speak to everybody on the call, but it between his Indian accent and, or Hindu accent.
Yeah, well, now we're used to it.
Right. And so it wasn't until COVID came into play that the friend sent us another link, and I opened it up, and at this point, I heard some things that spoke to me. And then it wasn't just weekly, he was on every night. And at the time we had some young people living and staying with us for the summer, helping out in the garden, our woofing program. And when I would put it on, they would also come over and listen. And so it got to be where if I wasn't remembering to put it on, they would either remind me or put it on. And I thought that was pretty fascinating too. So then it became just a calling to my soul to listen. And Jim, he would glance in once in a while, but he didn't really connect right away.
No, I didn't connect because, you know, there's all these little sharings or interviews or whatnot, questions being asked. But once, I think there was a YouTube video or something that we watched with Krishna G, and he explained what their whole concept was about oneness, getting as many people as possible to get into the state of consciousness and awareness that we're all one, you know, and that's a lot of the Hindu philosophy is the oneness philosophy. And there are a lot of groups around doing various things towards oneness, whether they're Christian groups or Catholic groups or Jewish groups. There are a lot of people out there doing it. So this is one avenue that we really like, that we, the meditations are short and sweet, and a lot of them are pretty profound and take you through a process depending on what you, when you listen to. So,
and each night there would be a teaching, and then Kumarji would explain or break it down a little bit and discuss it some. And it just really put us on this journey.
Yeah, so after...
into the oneness movement.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a couple of years with a lot of really good input, and I think that's kind of how we decided to do this radio show, is to share this whole method of meditating and see if you like it. Even if you can't get into the Hindu philosophy, the meditations themselves, they're guided meditations. Marion will probably lead us through some. I don't know. So many people that I've shared this with really do like the meditations.
Yeah, so that's pretty much how we came about the deciding to do the program
this
here.
This is where we finally graduated from. At our seeking journey of spiritual enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we wanted to do today, we mentioned the book, The Four Sacred Secrets. So we would like to read and discuss a little about the first sacred secret, which is live with a spiritual vision.
So I want you to ask yourself, and I'm going to ask you, Jim, do you feel as if achieving your goals is the only thing that gives life meaning?
Well, it's, for me, I mean, it's funny because in the past I've taken a lot of self-improvement classes that are centered on business and success, and it's all about having a goal, something you sink your teeth into, and achieving it, you know. And most of the time it was all about status and money. And for me, all those times, once I reached a goal, because I just set a lot of goals, and once I reached that goal, it was, okay, good, I'm done with that, what's the next one? So it didn't have a lot of meaning to me. Like, you know, because I didn't... It was all about material things, you know. It didn't have any...
Heart and soul
in it. It was just being the doer and doing it, you know. Just the doer and the doing. So, yeah.
So, can you share with me what your mental state was when you were pursuing those goals?
To achievement, to persevere and have determination and get to the final end.
And was it desperation, or do you believe you did it in joy and calm?
I think a lot had to do with being brought up as an athlete, you know, grammar school, high school. So that was always competition. You'd always set goals, the team goal, and you have individual goals for whatever, batting averages, touchdowns, you name it. And so it was all goal orientated. So there's nothing behind it that really, I mean, at that time, your achievement, you know, brought on great emotion and happiness and joy or
despair.
The agony. Depression. The agony and the ecstasy. So.
Well, can I ask you, do you think you're living with a spiritual vision now?
Yes, now, absolutely. You know, I'm later on in my life, and so I really, at a certain age, I think I'm probably about 65 or so, about 5-6 years ago, I really wanted to start gearing my life more towards the spiritual aspect of everything. I was done with the mundane thought of society, and the spiritual quest is high on my list.
Can you share with us what your spiritual vision is?
Well, you know, I mean, spiritual, we use that term loosely in my mind. It's getting towards, and even the word enlightenment, you know, we use the word enlightenment, and what is that? But it's getting more towards the present moment, the being with whatever I'm with. You know, I have, if I'm laying a wooden floor like I just did recently, for instance, it's being with the wood, you know, appreciating where the wood came from, the tree that it came from, thanking it, realizing that it's just a molecular form, just like me. I happen to be a human form, and it's a wood form, a tree form. So to me, that's where I really get. I like a lot of the Native American aspects because they're always into nature and all their rituals. A Hindu does like nature. Hindu gets really into the mind, you know, and the brain waves and the all the nadis and how the mind communicates with the body and with the universe. So I take both of those and put them together, and it's a real nice spiritual quest because now I'm not thinking about, you know, how many sales am I going to make today, or, you know, oh geez, we got to put up so much siding on the side of a house or whatever job, it's different. That's a different goal, to understand the universe versus to reach an end of money or, you know, finishing a job or whatever.
Right. Not so focused on the external results or the...
Right, that's a good way to put it.
The return.
Look at that. I could have done everything I said in three words.
All right. That's good.
I'm glad. That's exactly a good summary.
Okay.
You were listening.
I was.
I should listen so good to you sometimes.
I would appreciate that. So I'll share my spiritual vision.
Oh, great.
So since being involved in the oneness movement and I think my spiritual vision becomes more of including others, whether it be my family members, my neighbors and friends, and then even my community and the world at large, that I feel inspired and prompted to help where I can, or to contribute where I can. We have a weekly group. Presently, it's all women. Jim will sometimes come, and it's an NVC group. It's nonviolent communication, where we practice our listening skills. We practice our the words we choose, so that if we have a message to bring forth, it will be said in a way that's not difficult to hear, especially any messages with strong emotions. And then leading or inviting people to meditate and calm the mind. There's so many people that are looking for ways to cope or to raise out of their suffering states, whether it be depression, anger, resentment, separation, you name it. We're all looking at what is most prevalent in our lives and in the world at large. So being able to assist in any way, and to be able to offer some alternative methods, some teachings. I mean, when I read a paragraph or a chapter in this book, The Four Sacred Secrets, it just keeps reminding me how important it is to stay centered and tuned in to the universal intelligence, a higher source of guidance that we all have access to.
You know, you had touched on something about a suffering state and a beautiful state. And I know what's this is all based on, the oneness concept, is that there's only two states.
Correct.
You're either suffering, whether you're in stress or despair or depression, or you're in a beautiful state of joy, happiness.
Love.
And so what do you choose? Where do you want to hang out? And it's for most people, it's a pretty easy choice, but getting there can be a difficult situation because of all our subconscious mind and thought that is drifting through the brain all the time, and we latch onto it rather than letting it pass through or go past us like a cloud, you know.
It's very true, and so, you know, to be able to tap into a source that will assist us, And truly, it's as simple as taking those deep breaths that we started today's program with, to take some slow, deep breaths and really connect with your breath and be very conscious of it. I mean, that for me is a divine connection. It slows me down and it generates a frequency. I think it would be a frequency that calms the mind and usually brings forth answers or inspiration and guidance
in any given situation. Because, you know, we go from alpha, beta, theta, delta, back and forth, up and down, depending on where, how calm our mind is and how we operate through the day. If we're in a rush, if we can slow down and take that little sacred walk through the garden where you're paying attention to every step. There's a lot of nice little tools like that in yoga, consciousness. And they're all pretty similar, you know. But here are you going to read us some?
Well,
I was just going to say that with Akam here, this oneness, they have a temple in southern India that's on a vortex line. And they're called the O&O Academy, and it's not a ashram, so to speak, but rather it's a organization that gets people
learning different techniques or
to get to higher state of consciousness and self-awareness. Wouldn't you say?
Yes. And so there is a temple in India called Ekam, where it was a vision that Sri Amma and Sri Bhagavan, the parents of Krishnaji, started this movement with the vision to, or the mission, let's say it was the mission to help free humanity from suffering. And then Krishnaji, who is their son, he had a vision and was guided to build this powerhouse of a structure called Ekam. It really is a powerhouse, and it houses 8,000 people to meditate in. And it's built in southern India in a very special place where there are no grid lines. So it becomes a portal of divine energy.
Yeah.
Or a place where there's a high frequency coming in from the planets and the stars and the sun and
they call it the vortex. You know, there's a few of those around the world where it's just the way everything is lined up, that it's just kind of a special place. This place was built using the golden ratio formula, so it's quite a structure and has quite an energy to it. We've never been to it, but when you see pictures of it, it's pretty awesome. Did you want to read a little excerpt from the book or anything? This first show, we're kind of winging it here this time. In the future, we are going to have some interviews with people, other seekers.
That's what we just did with each
other. Yeah, we did that with each other.
So I would like to read from the introduction, just to give you a little bit of an idea, because we thought we'd share little excerpts from the book. And so this is from the introduction, and it says about this book, that it's a guide to unlocking the awesome potential of human consciousness. Tragically, most of us have never been taught to tap into this deep source of wisdom within. No wonder we spend so much time plotting and planning for happiness or achievement as if they were guests who can never be convinced to stay for a cup of tea. And just reading that, I get this vision of how in the past I would have happy moments, being with family and celebrating, and then the celebration is over and the happiness fades. And now with the understanding of how important the frame of mind we do things in and that we retain affects our life and brings forth, I'm going to call it the magic of life or the beauty of life.
Yeah, because instead of going up and down on a roller coaster with the emotional world, happiness or neutrality or, you know, sadness, you stay on a nice even keel with like a smile on your face.
Right. You know? And keep it there.
And keep it there.
Or at least more than the frown or the furrow in the eyebrows.
You know, it's beautiful thoughts, happy thoughts, calm thoughts versus being disgruntled or upset at somebody or even upset at yourself or whatever.
And just being present can be a joyous experience. To smell the soap when you're washing your hands or to feel the lather.
And it really is. I mean, you know, it's nice to slow down life.
Truly.
You know, slow it time and space. That's what it's all about. So if you can give yourself some space to enjoy the time that you're in, that's really good. Not easy to do, but we're getting there.
Yeah, and celebrate with a cup of tea. So in the pages that follow, we will share with you these four sacred secrets, which will attune you to the great power of consciousness. Each secret, which there are four, is followed by a life journey designed to set you free of all that is preventing you from realizing your dreams, from accessing expansive states of consciousness, and from truly connecting with your loved ones. The great reward of a transformed consciousness is that you will come to experience a way of being in the world that Krishnaji and Preetaji call the beautiful state. From such a state, life feels joyful and effortless. Opportunities start to flow into your life with ease. Random strangers become friends and supporters. Help comes to you at every step of your journey. No more do you find yourself feeling stuck. Your intuition is awake. And I have to tell you that I'm not going to say that I'm in a beautiful state all the time. That's absolutely not true. Although now I recognize when I'm not and allow myself to really look at what am I torturing myself with? What thoughts or belief systems that don't work for me?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has an effect. You asked me earlier how my body felt when I was doing yoga way back when.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know how my body feels in different emotional states.
Sure.
You know, tension, you know, stomach tightens, grinding the teeth, you know, concerned look on my face, anxiety, you know, or else just being calm.
Mm-hmm.
No, calm. Even the word calm just makes my whole body calm. When I was just describing all that, I can feel everything tightening up. It's amazing. So, That's pretty good.
So, the insight at the heart of this book is simple enough. There are only two states of being, which we've spoken of, a suffering state and a beautiful state. And if you keep it that simple in observing throughout the day which state you are in, soon you'll be able to recognize. And you don't necessarily want to change that frame of mind. You want to be able to feel it and just do some inventory. What's creating this? What am I thinking right now that has me spinning like a top or gulping my food or any number of things we do when we're not present and we're generally tensing up.
Yeah, so it really is taking the time to observe where you're at, witnessing what's going on with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the future, all of a sudden you become aware every time, you know. But I know what I wanted to say when you were reading that just a while ago too, is the comfort I feel when I nurture myself.
Yeah. And nurturing yourself in a way that even if it's recognizing that you're suffering, you're recognizing is a nurturing.
It's a nurturing, and then I can support myself when I recognize something that's going on, and I can I've got a support system there because I could, you know, go all of a sudden click into, oh yeah, so what? Okay, that was happening. I don't have to stay there. That's the past now. Let me get into this present moment again. And how am I going to do that? Oh, there's the beautiful state I can go to.
Well, we don't want to ignore the suffering, though. We want mm-hmm. to allow ourselves to suffer if that's what's up.
Ah, well, that's a good one.
We definitely don't want to stuff our suffering states. Because we all know what that looks like. Eventually it has to come up and it explodes. No. I'm quite certain it's what a lot of the earthquakes and tornadoes and...
And my anger. My reactionary...
Too
blood.
Much energy that is not realized and allowed to be there. And move through it.
Boy, I wonder if you would like to, we can put on some meditation music, and if you would like to lead us through a little meditation, that would be nice.
Okay, are we starting to draw towards the end?
So, if we did like maybe a nice little 10-minute meditation.
Well, I was thinking more of a 3-minute meditation.
Oh, 3 minutes.
And I think it's a good place to start, especially since we're on radio.
Mm-hmm.
10 minutes of silence on the radio may be a little...
Oh, well,
much.
We're going to play some meditation music.
Okay. So how about... So the meditation that I have in mind is called the Serene Mind Practice. And so this is a good one to do if you have a meeting coming up and you're feeling anxious or uncertain of what's gonna unfold there. There's something stressful going on in your life. So let's take this time to take a seated position. If you're driving, of course, you will keep your eyes open and just listen. But sit with your spine erect and let's take 3 deep abdominal breaths with total attention. So inhale slowly and let's allow the exhale to be longer than the inhale. Observe your state of mind and discover the exact emotion you are feeling. Are you feeling impatient? Any anxiety, frustration, or are you feeling joy, peaceful, loving? Check in with your body and see if you can sense where the sensation of that feeling is in your body. Now observe the direction of the flow of your thinking. Are you obsessing over the past? Are you projecting a chaotic future? Or are you in the present? Now imagine that there is a tiny flame at the center of your eyebrows. Visualize it burning brightly and swaying with the music. And now see it move inward to the middle of your skull. And vision this flame floating in the middle of emptiness. There in the center of your brain. Connect with your breathing. Take a deep breath. And as you exhale, you can slowly open your eyes. So for an audio guide of this Serene Mind practice led by Preetaji, you can learn more about the audiobook edition at www.theforsacredsecrets.com.
And then if you go to YouTube, and there are some meditations on
right,
YouTube.
This one will be on YouTube as well. It's called The Serene Mind Practice by Preetaji.
You want to spell that?
Preetaji. Preetaji.
And then the
And I just wanted to let you know that the best part of this powerful practice is that it's short. And it can be practiced anywhere, anytime. Once you become familiar with it, you can do it within your own closed eye, you know, within your own being at any given moment.
Any given moment? Like even if you're arguing or something?
Well, you can pause the argument and both sit down.
Oh, well, there's a thought.
Yeah, we've done it before. And you can use it just to check in and find yourself in the, you know, in an uncomfortable frame of mind or in an uncomfortable dialogue with someone. It can help you overcome resistance and, you know, with having to fulfill certain obligations or any number of things. So
what we're going to be doing in the future, we've got different interviews we're going to be doing. We're getting a hold of the organization here to see if there's any copyright problems to use some of their meditations. So we'll see how that goes. But it'll be a show very similar to what we just did today. Kind of low key.
And next week we will spend a little bit more time on the spiritual vision, since we didn't do a whole lot on that.
In other words,
I'll read
more
you an excerpt from the book next week on spiritual vision.
Okay.
So I would like to end with a Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Oh, and we're going to sing to you too.
May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. May the long time sun shine upon you, all love surround you, and the pure light within you guide your way on. Guide your way on. Guide your way on.
Well, thank you for listening. We hope it was fun. We had a lot of fun. I know I did.
Yes.
Yeah. And
good sharing with you.
Yeah. And so hopefully you'll come back. This is KGVM 95.9 on your dial. So enjoy your rest of the evening.
And have a restful sleep.
And a beautiful week.
Mm-hmm. Till then.
In a beautiful state.